friends, and welcome to the program. Sam Rzhovsky, Sam Nation here on the Sam Nation Radio Network, fighting dilatory obfuscation wherever we find it. The Mueller report, it has dropped. It came yesterday, released after a controversial news conference held by the Attorney General, Bill Barr. So now I'll tell you my impressions of all of this. I think that the Democratic Party finally found its best candidate for 2020, and it's this report. Look, you've got to understand who wrote this thing. Mueller is not the guy who wrote it. His name is on it, but he is not the person who put pen to paper, you know, fingers to keyboard, and put this whole thing together. I think pretty much without exception, the folks that assembled this, did the investigating, and, you know, and certainly organized the thoughts and followed the direction of the story, if you will, and decided on the narrative are people who are dedicated Democrats. Now, they may all not agree on who their chosen preferred candidate is in the great Democratic Party sweepstakes for 2020, but they all agree that the Trumpster has to be eliminated. And it is through that lens that you've got to read this thing if you are a masochist and into that type of thing. The report has nearly 500 pages all in when you count up all the words and the appendices and the like. And there's really not much in there other than an exoneration of the president. And then a whole lot of things that the number of things in there just are not true. And then there are a lot of things in there designed to give little driblets of fodder, if you will, for CNN, MSNBC, The New York Times, and The Washington Post. Now, if you want to first look at this collusion and obstruction, there's one point that I have not heard made about this. And that is that collusion and obstruction, of course, are two. One is born of the other, because what you have is if you have obstruction, you have obstruction of something, of an investigation, which would have been the charge here, right? That Trump was obstructing the investigation, and the investigation into what? Well, the investigation was, of course, into collusion or into conspiracy, right, with Russia to alter and interfere in the election of 2016. I want you to understand how ridiculous it is for the left and their minions to be shouting about the maybe on the obstruction side. Maybe there was not a complete exoneration. Sam, he didn't get cleared completely. Mueller left it open. That there could very well possibly be, we just couldn't prove it. We couldn't exonerate him fully, which I will later explain, is not the burden of proof, is not the legal standard used to decide whether persons are charged under the law in the United States. But nonetheless, you have this equivocating on the point of obstruction. And yet now nobody is really denying, because it's so clearly put in the meat of all of this, all these sections that are in the Mueller report, is that there's just no doubt that there was no collusion. So what you have is you have these talking heads, all these smart people, lawyers, they're all running amok, talking how there very well could have been obstruction. But that's the underlying charge of collusion, of conspiracy, that presumably is what is the investigation that Trump is trying to obstruct. There's a clear, you know, bill of health there. And this is, I'll tell you, just bear with me here. This is unusual. So imagine you're charged, you're under suspicion of DUI. and you're not drunk. You know you're not drunk. You know you're not drunk. So what do you do? Do you, I mean, you, police are investigating. I know it's, this is, but I just want to put it in simple terms. You yourself, you know you didn't have a drink. You got pulled over. You were tired. You were a little grumpy. You might have been a little too assertive with your constitutional rights. The police officers hauled you off. And now there's an investigation and you know you didn't do anything wrong. You can still obstruct it, but you, in order to pull, you know, in order to show obstruction, one of the things you have to do is that there's clear intent, right, to stop that investigation, and that you have a nefarious motive, right? You have a criminal motive for stopping that investigation, and that criminal motive comes from what? From guilt. Right? From knowing your own culpability in the underlying criminal case. And it makes it, I'm just telling you, it makes it that much harder. It makes it that much more difficult. If this wasn't Donald Trump and this was Joe Schmo American, there is no way a prosecutor could ever take this to court. And the fact that they're That the matter that was being investigated is a big fat nothing that even CNN at this point can agree on. That helps. It's not just helps. It's critical to showing, to proving that the obstruction case is equally flimsy. It's just very difficult in that DUI case to explain, wait a minute, how did you have this culpability? How did you have this feeling of guilt? How did you have this, guilty, it's a legal word for guilty conscience. How did you have a guilty conscience that you then acted on to interfere with the prosecutor and with the police that were, you know, looking into the case? How did you have all of that? If you yourself knew you were never guilty, because you weren't. Because the blood test then later comes back and it's, you know, as predicted, 0.00. Anyway, this is a point nobody's making. And that's why, and they're not making it because they don't want to make it, because they want to look at these two charges, the obstruction, the collusion, excuse me, and the obstruction as two separate things. They're not. They're inextricably linked. Now, I also take tremendous issue with this thing in the report that's repeated over and over again, that Russia wanted Trump to win. This is, by the way, I don't even need to see the roster. I don't even need to know who the who's who of underlings that were writing this silly thing. But I know based on that language alone that, one, there's a lack of inquisitiveness. There's a lack of understanding of Russia and how they operate. And there's a strong desire to nail Trump at all costs and to tar him still, right? To smear him with this allegation that he is Putin's president. Russia we're talking about early 2016. Russia was no different. Russia did not, unless Putin was listening to Sam Nation, which is possible, because I do talk about Putin from time to time. I, of course, being no fan of Vladimir, and I, of course, as an Eastern European, highly skeptical and concerned about Russia's various ambitions. I am not a Russophile, but I will tell you this. Unless they have some machine that looks into the future, I'm pretty damn well Skippy sure that Russia had no idea that it was even possible that Trump become president. They were trying to wound Hillary. They were trying to, I will accept possibly the allegation that Russia was sowing seeds of discord. Yeah. They were agents of chaos, friends. That's what this was. But they didn't sit around a table and say, oh, my goodness, what we really want is we want Trump in there. Trump would be great if we could just get Trump elected. I mean, you tell me. If you're alive and not, you know, in a coma in the in 2016, did you think in early 2016, was it, oh, boy, if we just release some emails, some hacked emails, if we get those, why, yes, of course, we could totally turn the tide of this election. We will be able to just run roughshod over Hillary. That's absurd. You really have to suspend all disbelief to think that that's possible. Now, the other part of this, of course, is the great lie, an unproven fact, we'll say this, that the emails were hacked by the Russians. Do you remember the genesis of this is very interesting. You know, we're talking about the Podesta emails. These are the Hillary Clinton's campaign manager, John Podesta. My father says he looks like an evil cardinal, which on Good Friday, I think probably shouldn't abstain from being rude. But at any rate, Podesta had all these emails going back where they were conspiring with the DNC to install Hillary Clinton as the chosen candidate for president for the Democratic Party in 2016 and defrauded Bernie Sanders from receiving the nomination in great opposition to the tremendous popular support that he had among the rank and file. Now, as this was all happening, of course, these goofballs were all doing it by email because when you're in the Clinton orbit, you think nothing can happen to you. You can steal billions of dollars. You can get funded by every bad actor internationally possible through your foundation. You can live high on the hog, thumb your nose at the law. You can sell, if you recall from the Clinton years in the White House, you can sell nuclear secrets to the Chi-Coms and be absolutely okay, get away with it, no problemo. So, of course, if you're going to cheat some, you know, guy named Bernie who's got crazy hair from Vermont, you're just putting it all down in email. So they put it all down in email. And we're not exactly sure where those emails came from. The report says that this was a concerted effort by the GRU, which is one of the spy agencies of Russia, a leftover, by the way, from the Soviet era. And the GRU, apparently, it's like their CIA. That's what they are. And the GRU did this hacking and found it. We don't know that necessarily. It's not proven. And do you know why? Because when the hack occurred, quote unquote, when the hack occurred, what did the DNC do? Did they call the FBI? Because I'm thinking, look, if you're a political party and your email has just been compromised by a foreign government, what do you do? I mean, you call the FBI. And they didn't do that. They packed up their server and they sent it to a private company for analysis, never to be heard from again. This whole thing stinks. And the fact that that is in question, the fact that that is that the assertions that were stated by the Democratic Party lawyers are just put in as fact into this report is all I need to know, that this is just nothing more. This the almost 500 pages of this thing is nothing more than Democratic Party talking points for 2020. Here is how all of this backfires. Nobody's actually going to read this report. I mean, not the people that are voting, not voters. And Trump is a formidable candidate who will very deftly explain all this, make fun of it. And he's in the right. And at the end of the day, a report that was a criminal the culmination of a criminal investigation is really there's not a lot there if it doesn't result in any criminal charges or recommendations for prosecution. So what are we now? What is today? We are Good Friday, April 19th, 2019. The election is in November 2020. This, friends, will all be old news by the time you and I go to the voting booths. What will be extremely fresh and current is the investigation that no doubt will be going full steam into all the Obama-era officials who made all of this possible. The FISA warrants that were used, abused, the FISA warrant process that was taken advantage of, the lies that were told to those judges, the planted spies that made contact with the Trump campaign and fabricated the entire basis for this investigation. This will all, that's going to be, that will be the story. This thing, we haven't heard the end of this. I agree. And the more shrill that the media is about this report, the more angry you hear, the more outrage that you hear. Listen to it through, just put it through a translator. And the translation is this: we are scared as hell that this is going to blow up in our faces. And so, yeah, this is right now, this report is the best candidate the Democrats have because all the rest of the candidates suck for whatever reason. Each one, we can go through that later. But at the end of the day, if this is the best that the Democratic Party has, if this is the great anti-Trump hope, then God help you people, because Trump's going in 4 more years like butter. Sam Rogowski back right after this.
In this present crisis, government is the solution to our problem. Government is the problem. And Sam Nation is the solution. Of course, you need jelly beans for that.
Rogowski, no, this is exactly my point here. Page 4, I mean, let me look at this. Page 4 of the report, I mean, nothing really happened. It's the first, the third paragraph after the introduction. Guys that wrote this report, we wasted no time to get right to the meat of their agenda. At the same time, the paragraph begins, at the same time that the IRA, which is the Internet Research Agency, it's a private group, some kind of bloggers, hackers, whatever they are, supposedly funded by a Russian oligarch close to Putin. That is all my, those are all my words that I put in there just for your background. The IRA operation began to focus on supporting candidate Trump in early 2016. And now the entire narrative goes from there, right? It's all about supporting Trump. Trump is the chosen candidate, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. This, by the way, there wasn't in the report, I haven't read the whole thing yet, but I'm telling you, I still have not found exactly a moment where the Russian government sent somebody, right, that they sent themselves to go and to offer information to Trump, anything meaningful. Remember that attorney, that lady that went to Trump Tower and Don Jr. set the meeting, and it was a big, she dangled a carrot, right? She dangled a carrot that they had compromising material on Clinton, and Trump took the meeting, and everybody look at that. That's it. That's collusion. Let me explain. First of all, collusion, and the report does correct this. It's not collusion. It's conspiracy, and conspiracy requires an agreement among two or more people, right, to commit a crime. And there has to, usually most statutes require some overt act, that you've got to take some kind of step beyond just chitty chat. Now, it's not the overt act that you've got to focus on here. It's that two or more people that both have the intention to commit a criminal act. Generally, right, you can't have a conspiracy with, for example, a criminal actor, a criminal, and a government stooge. So all of these, why? Well, why is that? Because the criminal stooge isn't intending to commit a crime. The criminal stooge is a, the government stooge is an informant. So when the Obama administration sent all these goofy, weird spies that were all going out and saying, oh, George Papadopoulos, I've got something for you, Georgie. Here you go. Here's some goodies from Russia. Well, they didn't have any goodies from Russia. They weren't being sent by Russia. They were being sent by Obama. James Clapper and all those goofballs. So you can't enter into a conspiracy with an informant. And that's an important point here. And then it also requires an overt act. And what's the overt act? Well, certainly, you know, listening to them and hearing them out and then doing nothing about it, that there's nothing there. And yet the liberal intelligentsia still insists that if you and I look hard enough, if we, you got to really squint, you got to draw up as much face muscles in your Southern California Botoxed face that you possibly can. And look very closely, you will find collusion. Here is a great example of it. Carl Bernstein of Watergate fame, Washington Post reporter and rabid anti-Trump left-winger, talking to CNN's Chris Cuomo, who I think has a similar pedigree. Here's the exchange. First, it's Bernstein, then it's Cuomo talking.
This report already is the connective tissue that explains everything we've been reporting over the past 2 years. It's here in substance, in nuance, in context, and it's there for all people of goodwill in this country, if they're not so dug in politically or ideologically, to process the information and make some sophisticated judgments about the behavior of everybody I've mentioned here.
Sophisticated judgments is the operative phrase, because I don't know how, in good conscience, if you have a dose of shame in you and you want to support the president, that's fine. Stick to criminality. Stay away from the word collusion, because there's a ton of collusion. There's a ton of clever, secretive behavior.
What? Oh, I get it. So Trump ought to be in jail, right? This is what we've heard from CNN for months, right? Trump ought to be in jail. Lock him up. Throw away the key. Impeachment, right? Impeachment, by the way, high crimes, right? Misdemeanor, high crimes and high misdemeanors. You've got it. There's a legal standard. This is America, people. It astounds me. And this is the greatest, right? This is beyond just Trump. This is the underlying hypocrisy of the American left. And the bipolarity, if you will, of their personality when it comes to political personality. Because on one hand, these are the same people that support the ACLU and believe in civil liberties and believe in the rule of law and believe in prosecutors being and cops, you know, being bad by virtue of them. And oftentimes they're right, by virtue of the power given to them by the state to prosecute and go after poor people of color. But the law looks at poor people of color the same way as it does at orange right-wing presidents. They are all equal. We are all equal under the law. And they want to throw out the legal standard. And they said, well, if you want to focus on this being a yes or no criminal, now, well, fine, do that. But you got to look beyond this. Collusion. Collusion, folks, is not a legal standard. You can collude till the cows come home. You're not going to go to jail for it. You can't be charged for it because it's not in the law. And the U.S. Code has conspiracy. And conspiracy is the issue. And you either meet the legal standard. You either have sufficient proof to charge and take a case to trial, or you don't. And I will explain a little bit. This is an important point. Again, I'll put on my lawyer hat. You got to understand what it takes to bring a case to trial versus what it takes to convict. And I'll get into that, because the Mueller just messed with all that whole formula. He's turned it upside down. And by the way, if this were a law school paper, big fat F. Sam Rzhovsky back right after this. Don't go anywhere.
I was listening the other day to a friend of mine. His name is Sam, Sam Majowski. You'll find him very anything. He's very stylish. He's always wearing his suit. And if you want to hear someone's opinion that absolutely is correct, you listen to Sam. Anyone else is a waste of time.
Sam Rudzovsky, Sam Nation here on the Sam Nation Radio Network. I wanted to just take a brief pause here and mention something that is happening a little closer to home, to where I live, here in Irvine, California. We are, as you know, here in the Orange Curtain, right behind the Orange Curtain, traditionally, a very respectable right-wing conservative area. And in 2016, something happened. Every one of our congressional districts and every one of our assembly districts turned blue. And this became a national news story because, I mean, that's a big deal in an area that was one of the last, we'll call it more metropolitan oases of Republicanism in the state of California. And in my district, a woman named Katie Porter won a seat that had been previously occupied by one Mimi Walters. Now, Congresswoman Porter, no real idea of who she is. I haven't heard boo from her at all. In fact, as people have been discussing this race, I've had a number of people ask me, who's our congresswoman? Who's the lady? But it's already beginning to heat up on the Republican side because we got to do something about this in Orange County. And I am pleased to report that a great man has joined the fight for the Republican Party nomination. Ray Genoway, who is a former classmate of mine from Chapman Law, and has been serving in the Orange County District Attorney's Office as a prosecutor, has announced on Monday that he will be running for the Republican Party nomination. And I wish him well because I know Ray. I know him well. And he is a fine guy. He's a great guy. He is also a principled conservative. And I think has one hell of a chance to bring back the seat to the Republican Party. So, Ray, I wish you well and good luck with everything. And we're going to follow this race closely as it takes its various twists and turns. The report, the Mueller report, it's out. And the sky is falling on the Democrats. I'm loving this. I'm just loving this. I now turn on CNN just to watch how miserable they are. And you can see it. This is the best part about television versus radio. You can see the liberals' misery live via satellite. It's beamed right into my office, right into my living room. If I wake up in the morning, I turn on CNN and I just begin giggling to myself. Can you imagine? Can you imagine? I mean, they were so convinced that the setup was going to work. They were so convinced that this rigged game would produce a result. And why wouldn't they be? I mean, let's step back from this. Why wouldn't they think that this would all work out? It worked out with Hillary. The powers that be in the Democratic Party and on the American left wanted Hillary. She was the anointed selection for the Democratic Party to be their lead. They didn't want crazy Bernie. They didn't want. And here's I'm going to speak to some of you that maybe do not agree with me on most points. But hear me out on this. The Democratic Party does not like Bernie Bros. The Democratic Party, the denizens of the left do not like Bernie Sanders voters. And to some extent, what was happening on the Democratic side mirrored what happened on the Republican side. The difference is, and I've said this over and over again on this program, the difference is that Republicans believe in democracy. The difference is that on the Republican side, it came down to votes. The people voting in the Republican primary got their pick. And their pick wasn't who the establishment wanted. The pick was not the guy. It was nowhere close to who they wanted. And the consequence of that we see today. We see it all the way, you know, fast forward the 2.5 years to now, to this Mueller report, the investigation that preceded it, the inability, the refusal of even Republicans to protect the president from this, as he put it, bull crap. Right. That is all a consequence of the establishment getting kicked in the rear by the voters. But on the Democratic side, the establishment there prevented the people's pick from coming forward because they look down on him. And frankly, they look down on all of you that voted for him and support him. And the consequence of that was a candidate that nobody on that side, well, not nobody, but that not enough people on that side really wanted. That tampering with democracy then led, of course, to Trump's eventual win. It was a significant contributing factor because on one side, every election is not just about the strength of one candidate, but the weakness of the other. And going into that fight, then what tool did the Democrats have left? What arrows did they have in their quiver? All they knew they knew how to rig the system. And so as soon as Trump began gaining steam, that is when Peter Strzok, Lisa Page got together, began sexting each other about insurance policies. What the hell you think they were talking about? No, it was not a Planned Parenthood visit, but it was, since the Democrats love abortions, it was going to be a political abortion. They were absolutely certain that they were going to politically abort Donald Trump. Well, it took 2 years. Does this qualify as a late-term abortion? Yeah, well, functional equivalent of taking those pliers in there. And I'm just telling you this, the thing about bad actors, and especially bad actors, the liberals are not creative and they run the same playbook over and over again. I'm not a sports guy. If this was football, the team would lose over and over again. They're running the same play. Understand that this all stems from the Republican Party doing the right thing, and for all of its warts, for all of the terrible people that are in the Republican Party, at least we ran a clean election. And now I am looking forward to a clean investigation into how all of this happened, because the dirty plays, the dirty tricks that the Democrats played, fine. Bernie let it go. Bernie said, "Oh, you know, I'm moving on and, you know, no harm, no foul." Although privately, he's cursing the party and cursing Hillary. He let it go. But I'm going to tell you something. The little I know about Trump is he sure as hell ain't letting it go. And Bill Barr, our attorney general, he's not the president's defense attorney. He is a guy who seems to me, at least right now, to be a principled enforcer of the law. And it is that enforcement of the law that now will wreak hell, fire, and destruction for all these goofballs that brought us to this point. And no, I haven't forgotten about the legal standard. I want to get back to that because this is critical. I love how Democrats shift law around to suit whatever ends they mean to achieve. And that is exactly what they do and exactly what they did during the election. And it's exactly what they try to do in this report. And it is not working. Thank goodness. Sam Rogowski, don't go anywhere.
You're looking for a show that doesn't sugarcoat the truth. Sam Nation will accommodate you.
Sam Rujofsky, Sam Nation, here on the Sam Nation Radio Network, making radio great again, one segment at a time. Happy Friday, Good Friday. We are just getting into the meat of all of this report. I want to make this point before I get distracted with any more pithy thoughts about burden of proof, the exoneration question, and how this all ties together in this report. All right. Great hay right now is being made of the fact that the president was not completely exonerated by Mueller's team on the issue of obstruction. And there is repeated language in the report that says pretty much exactly that. We cannot completely exonerate the president. Now, I'm going to ask you, I'm just going to pretend you're a first-year law student. You're sitting in my course on criminal law. Now, I don't have one, but I'm just pretending if I did. And this is probably one of the places that we would begin. Because I can't, in this day of age, rely on someone that has been carefully selected, weeded through, has an impeccable academic resume, has earned one of a very few seats available in my law school class to sit there by virtue of their supreme qualification. I can't rely on the fact, after 4 years in a top university in the United States, that they will know anything about the burden of proof about the law. No, because, of course, they spent most of their time hugging trees and talking about lesbians and, you know, and people that have changed their gender at least four times. And that all is very interesting, and they're going to leave the school with a great understanding of all of that stuff. But God forbid they know anything about the Constitution. So I digressed again. But here we go. What I would say, you want to start with understanding who has the burden of proof. And the burden of proof is on the government, is on the district attorney, on the U.S. attorney, whichever sovereign, be it the state, be it the county, be it the U.S. government, be it the nation, whoever is putting you on trial, whichever sovereign is charging you with a crime, they have the burden of proof to prove your guilt beyond doubt, reasonable doubt. In order to charge you, though, there's a sufficiency standard. There has to be sufficient proof that there is a reasonable suspicion of criminal conduct. It's a lower standard. So here's what happens at the end of a criminal case. I know we've all watched Perry Mason, right? Or Law and Order. The jury comes back, and what do they say? Do they say guilty or exonerated? Do they say guilty or absolutely pure as the white-driven snow? What do they say? Do they say, no, they say guilty and not guilty. And not guilty doesn't mean that you didn't do it. Not guilty means that there wasn't enough proof. And you're done. The standard for proving somebody's guilt is high. The standard to put somebody on trial for whatever allegation of illegal conduct there is lower. If you can't meet the burden of proof for bringing charges, then you sure as hell can't get a guilty in trial. This entire report is a contortion of the legal standard by which our country adjudicates guilt and innocence. And it really, when we talk about guilt or innocence, we're really talking about that not in a religious setting. I think a lot of people think of it, you know, it's, you know, you either did the deed or you didn't do the deed. Think of it in religious terms, but it's legal terms. Thank goodness, by the way, thank goodness. And our founding fathers were wise to divorce themselves from a more cultural, religious definition of guilt. and applied strict methodical standards to differentiating people that would go to jail and lose their life, their liberty, and people that wouldn't. If Mueller's definition of exoneration and the way it's being looked at by the media were applied in criminal cases across the country, half this country would be imprisoned. There's just no doubt about it. And of course, that's a consequence that our founding fathers did not intend, and it would be an absurd consequence. And you're saying, well, no, that wouldn't happen. No. What would happen is that any person really could be charged with a crime and be convicted. And so we would have people in government, through their attorney generals, through their prosecutors, determining who lives and who doesn't, who survives and is not charged with crimes and who ends up going to jail. And that kind of power our founding fathers never intended to give. They didn't intend to give it to a county prosecutor, and they sure as hell didn't intend to give it to a special counsel, attorney general. No, that's not how it works. So just remember, if you live by the sword, you die by the sword. You do not want to. I don't care how much you hate Trump. You do not want to live in a country that has such a relaxed standard and misunderstanding, frankly, of what the government's burden of proof is in criminal cases. Sam Rogowski, back right after this.
And now, ladies and gentlemen,
Now, ladies and gentlemen, on the show tonight is Sam Rogowski. Now, what Sam is the leading word in correct thinking, as opposed to Ed, which is drunk thinking. And that's usually where the left ends up, on the wrong side of right.
Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, yes! Yes. I'll tell you, one thing here that needs to be also said is about all of this Mueller report nonsense is that, none of this would ever have happened under Obama. And it's not because Obama didn't engage in criminal conduct. It's not because Hillary Clinton didn't engage in criminal conduct. The unbelievable amount of shady things that are now going to come to light. You wait and see. You've noticed that Obama's keeping a very low profile in all of this. I haven't heard him say boo about this. I haven't. Hillary Clinton, too, keeping of her head down on all this. Now, her and Bill are on a tour of the country. And they're getting up on stages in various auditoriums. They're paying, what, $250, $300 to sit for a couple hours and listen to Bill and Hillary drone on about nothing. They're getting these softball questions thrown at them by Paul Begala, who's one of the well-known Clinton stooges. Nothing controversial. Everything is scripted. They don't take questions from the audience. Why? On one hand, you could interpret it as classic, a Clinton operation, but the Clintons need money right now. They need money. Controversy sells. These events could be a hell of a lot more interesting, by the way, if you let a few people come in there and ask them some sharp questions. And I'm faith in Hillary limited, but Bill, man, that guy knows how to spin a yarn. He could take those curveballs. But their lawyers are all over this, friends. They know what's coming. The difference why it didn't come to light then is because they were protected by their attorney general. Who did they have? Eric Holder, who proudly called himself Obama's wingman. Remember that every time. Every time you hear the media saying that Bill Barr is Trump's defense attorney. And then, of course, Loretta Lynch, the infamous tarmac meeting with El Jefe, Presidente Clinton, William Jefferson. They were protected from top on down. as I mangle my metaphors. Here is Chuck Todd talking about Barr briefing Trump. Like, this is like the obvious. How can Barr brief the president before any of us see the report? How the hell can this happen? Listen to this.
This gets to the larger issue here that I think that it is just, I don't know what you want to call it, shamelessness, hubris, whatever it is. But the fact that had any Democrat tried anything like this, the impeachment hearings would have been, I mean, when what you have here, the attorney general briefing the president of the United States, This is collusion. By the way, in case you're wondering, what does collusion look like? It looks like the attorney general briefing, the attorney general's lawyers briefing the president before Congress or the public.
Oh my God, I don't even know where to begin on this. But I do have a little blast from the past. Nancy Pelosi, shrill opprobrium here. Speaking on the floor of the House in a House debate about the Starr report, which is the last report to come from a special counsel. And here is a younger, less stroked out Nancy Pelosi.
Mr. Speaker, for 7 of the 11 years that I have served in Congress, I've served on the Ethics Committee or the Ethics Task Force. It is from that perspective that I have several questions to ask. If indeed what we're talking about here today is the process under which the Starr report will be released, why would you not afford the President of the United States the same opportunity that you were given by the Ethics Committee of having almost a week's advance notice to review the charges against you, and so that you could have your response be part of the report?
Okay. You got to be consistent. You know, we have these things. We have this technology now. Started with tapes. Now we have digital storage. Video, even. Past comments will come back to haunt you. But here's the short answer. Look, the attorney general is the one here who appointed the special counsel. And the special counsel reports to the attorney general, and the attorney general reports to the United States because he is an office within the executive branch of government. If you don't like how that is, change the Constitution. But consistency has never been a Pelosi strong suit. Sam Rejofsky, when I come back, I'm going to mention, especially since it's Good Friday, I will tell you how everyone's gotten this wrong on Notre Dame. And the terrible fire that occurred there Monday of this week. So please bear with me on that. I have some thoughts as a European looking from across the pond. Back right after this.
We shall fight on the airwaves. We shall fight on Twitter and Facebook. We shall broadcast our program, whatever the cost may be. And if Sam Nation lasts for 1,000 years, men will say this was their finest hour.
Hi, Sam Rejofsky, Sam Nation, here on the Sam Nation Radio Network in our special studios located deep behind the orange curtain, counting on congressional candidate Ray Genoway to strengthen the Orange Curtain and restore democracy, freedom, capitalism to the great reaches of Orange County. If you missed that, I got a friend of mine who's running against Katie Porter here in California's 45th Congressional District, and we do wish him well. I, like many Americans, including Michelle Obama, who was photographed with a face, I thought it was her regular face, but apparently this was a face of horror and shock as an aide showed to her during a luxury cruise that she was on. These images of Notre Dame, the famous cathedral in Paris, engulfed in flame. Now, I have nothing to add to that part of the story as far as the fire itself than to say it's sad and a tragedy. What can you say? It's horrible. Now, I also did you notice how everybody on social media began posting pictures of themselves in front of the cathedral, how, you know, oh, this is me, you know, in front of Notre Dame in 2003, and it was the most magical place. You know, and I, well, yes, I also have a photo of myself on my, I know I have it, because we went to Paris. Daniel was a nugget. He was fresh out of the womb. I want to say Daniel was 3 months old when we went to Paris last. And now he's 11. So you can do the math how long ago I last visited Paris. I also know that my wife ate her weight in chocolate croissants on that trip. Maybe that's why we haven't gone back since. But yes, I first of all, just a little side-to-side comment about everybody's social media pictures. That's just, people are so predictably vain. And I say this as a very vain and predictable person, but predictably vain. They had to make it about themselves. And the next thing that happened in the story is it became a fight over conjecture. And what I mean by this is that the entire story then shifted to, could this be an act of terror? And what we began talking about, we in the media, a lot of people, and I think quite accurately, mentioning the 800-odd churches in France that had been recently vandalized by either people who are adherents of the Islamic faith or people who are anti-religious. And all, you know, the used, I guess, the other occurrences to say, well, there could be something here. Now, the reaction to that was, oh, you can't guess. You can't. There's no conjecture. You cannot. And I, as we are enjoying the great Mueller sweepstakes, when is the report going to be released? When is Barr going to have all his redactions done? And I'm just thinking, the last 2 years have been nothing but conjecture. So here I am getting lectured by the left-wing media about conjecture on the right, about what happened with the Notre Dame fire. And there, of course, when it deals with left-wing issues, there's no conjecture. You cannot, do not assume you make an ass out of you and me. So I had immediately, if I had done a show on Monday night, that I would have told you, I would have had immediately this thought. And I so far have heard my thought nowhere in the media. And I've waited. In fact, I kind of thought, shoot, sooner or later, someone's going to beat me to the punch, because by virtue of having a once a weekly program, you know, sometimes I have this great thought and I have to hold on to it for 3 or 4 days. And then by the time I am sharing it with you, it sounds a little old hat. But here was my immediate thought. My immediate thought is that, of course, accidents happen. But I do believe, and I do believe in such a thing as a zero fail mission. Now, Robbie, you were in the armed forces. Are you familiar with that term, zero fail mission? Well, I've heard this term used by a member of the Air Force in describing the operation of Air Force One. In other words, Air Force One, every time the president flies, that is a zero-fail mission. The plane can't effing fall from the sky, right? It's got the president of the United States on board. And so inordinate steps are taken to ensure that that airplane remain aloft at all times desired. To me, I don't know, if I was French or a citizen of the world, right? What, Notre Dame, repairing Notre Dame, is this not a zero-fail mission? Today, some word has come out that it was an electrical glitch, a computer glitch, some kind of a spark, right, that came from some electronic equipment. And my initial thought on all of this was, this is a representation of the deterioration of the European labor market. Now, what do I mean by this? I had just had an opportunity, and this just confirmed my thought. I met a friend this week. I went up to Santa Monica. I left Orange County and went deep into enemy territories to meet a friend visiting from the Czech Republic. Now, this man and his wife, they're very well-to-do, successful people from the Czech Republic. And I was asking them, they had some employee issues. They've got quite a lot of people that they employ. And I was just testing the waters on this as I was mulling about my theory on Notre Dame. And I asked them what they need to do to fire a person. And you have to understand that in Europe, in the European Union, you basically need an act of Congress to fire somebody. And I am telling you, and I'm going to conject now. I am going to assume. I am going to prognosticate that if this isn't terrorism, it's incompetence. And it's incompetence born of a terribly left-wing agenda as it relates to labor. Because if an employer, like employers in France or the Czech Republic or Germany, if you need to go through a 2-year procedure that you are still destined most of the time to lose in order to fire an incompetent boob that works for you, guess what? Accidents will happen. Preventable accidents will happen. And they do on a far smaller scale. It's just that, you know, kind of when Notre Dame catches on fire and it's still going up in smoke, that gets a little bit of international attention. I am telling you, I immediately in my head, I go, I know what happened. There is some guy there that's working for the construction company that's fixing, because there was a renovation underway. And they'd hired a construction company called Lebras Frere. And there's our brothers of Lebras, nothing to do with Brazier, but it's the name of the owner of the company who looks very cherubim-like. He also may be about 12 and a half. I am not sure if this man has gone through puberty yet. He is young. He is a millennial. And he's got this company that, of course, has gotten all these awards. And he told the powers that be, you can trust us with Notre Dame. And I don't care how good of a boss he is. I don't care how young or old or inexperienced. I shouldn't have made fun of the way he looks. But all I can tell you is he's French. He's doing business in France. He's an employer in France. And he is F-U-C. You know the rest of the word. Why? Because he can't fire anybody. The best tool I have as an employer, and if you work for me, I'm sorry, I'm going to let you in on a little secret. The best thing that makes our company great where we work, our firm, is I can fire your A-money money. That's the best thing. And you know what? You like it because you work hard and you don't want to work side by side with somebody that doesn't. You do not want to share the air with incompetence. When you do, and if my hands were tied by the government, guess what would happen? Incompetence would begin to spread. Why would you work hard for the same paycheck as the guy next to you or the gal next to you or the thing next to you? Why would you put in the same effort if that person doesn't and still gets the same amount of money? If that person gets to keep their job the same way you do? So then what happens is incompetence spreads. And I'm talking, folks, I am talking from experience, and I have been a manager since I was 21 years old. So hear me out. I know what I'm talking about here. Incompetence spreads like untreated cancer. The sick cells are aggressive. And they are aggressive because when an employee, and I'm assuming it's a conscious effort, right? I'm assuming somebody comes in the door and they're fantastic, because when you have really strict labor rules, employers are extra, extra careful before they hire anybody. And that's an unintended consequence, of course, of very restrictive firing rules. But anyway, they come in, employees, they start to deteriorate a little bit. And then what happens? The first human instinct is to feel bad. to feel remorse. But the second instinct is justification, right? The second instinct that comes along is, well, wait. Why am I feeling bad? I'm sick of feeling bad. This isn't me, the boss I work for. He's an a-hole. They don't pay me enough. They're mean. That Murjovsky guy, he's a PRI. You know, anyway, I want to use a lot of bad words, but of course I cannot because this is a family program. And then rationalization, right? It's full-blown rationalization. And in order to perpetuate a full, thorough rationalization of your own bad conduct, you got to bring other people in. And so you start to spread it. You know this place. You know this place ought to be doing this. You know our boss ought to be saying this. You know. And by the way, you know I'm right. I don't know if you manage people or not, but we all work in the world. We all know. We've all been around people like this. And they are a cancer on us as hardworking, you know, as hardworking people. And Europe right now is in a state of decay. And I think we focus a lot about cultural decay, right? We focus on the issue of immigration, mass immigration in Europe that has caused a deterioration of the fabric of society that has long been Europe's strongest suit. You know, we say diversity makes us strong. In fact, in Europe, I would agree. I would argue that it has not. Diversity, quote-unquote diversity, has weakened the fabric of Europe. And I see this as a European. I see somebody who has family in Europe. I feel very strongly about this. But I'm talking about something else. I am talking about how socialism is destroying Europe. Because these ideas of protecting workers, read the proletariat, right? Because if you're Bernie, you're sitting out, they publicly calls them workers, but really he's talking down to you. You're the proletariat. Okay? That's who he's talking about. The proletariat must be protected. The proletariat must be coddled and secured against the evil exploiters, the capitalists, employers, corporations, right? And that rhetoric that is now being used in our country today by AOC, by Sanders and others, democratic socialism, what the F is that, right? This rhetoric was used long ago in Europe, was embraced, was institutionalized, codified, put into law. And I believe that when the dust settles, it's actually that caused this Notre Dame thing. Because when you're fixing a treasure of, you think about 800 years and the thing burns almost to the ground in the era of what? In the era of smoke detectors, fire trucks, helicopters, planes, technology. What? The only thing that's worse now are the people. We are worse. We got all this great technology, but we've handcuffed ourselves. We are literally legislating ourselves out of efficiency and back into the Stone Age. The greatest existential threat, folks, I saw there was a little girl that went to the UN and everybody's passing around her little video. The world is going to fall apart because of global warming. Shut up. Global warming is not. Yes, I'm telling a little girl to shut up. I have three kids. Trust me. From time to time, I have to do that. Stop talking. You've been brainwashed. The greatest threat to the world is not global warming. It's socialism. And nukes. I'll give you that. And I think it's all of this is important context to analyzing what's happening right now politically in our country with this democratic field. And it worries me. It ought to worry you, too, because I think that people have no idea what socialism is. They don't even really know what democracy is. They talk about both. But yes, again, back to what they learn in college, which is a whole lot of nothing. They really don't understand what's going on. All right, don't go anywhere. More on this. I'm going to tie this all into the race. So connecting the dots here for you. So you are excellently and supremely informed, more than you are or would be if you listened to any other program. Sam Murjovsky, Sam Nation on the Sam Nation Radio Network.
In this present crisis, Government is the solution to our problem. Government is the problem. And Sam Nation is the solution. Of course, you need jelly beans for that.
You make a great point. I wish, you know, we need to basically get our break conversations on the air. We could create a whole separate channel of the things that we say when the mic is not hot. So, friends, in the meantime, I will catch you up to speed. Dr. Audio, as soon as I got off the air, Dr. Audio says to me, well, you know, I mean, you're right. A national treasure. When you think of France, you think of Paris, right? Nobody really thinks of other areas. Oh, the wine region, Cannes, a little bit, but you know, you don't think of Lyon. You think of Paris. So Paris. What do you think of in Paris? Well, I think of the Eiffel Tower. I think of Notre Dame, and I think of the Arc de Triomphe, and oh, the Louvre. Yes, yes, yes. The paintings. An objet d'art. So if you're repairing one of these iconic national treasures, to my point of it being a zero film mission, what do you do? And Dr. Audio said, well, I would have brought in an American company to do it. Oh, Dr. Audio, you do not know the French. They would rather burn Notre Dame to the ground than let an American company fix it. But it did trigger a little thought about what I was saying as far as labor rules. I mean, what I would have done is I would suspend all the labor rules. I would run this thing like a military operation. Retreat. I would have suspended all of these silly restrictions. And this, if in fact something like this happens in our government, do you know what I'm talking about? There is, by the way, if you're a federal employee, you are protected. You are this belt and suspenders as far as what they can and can't do to you, unless you're in an appointed position, like a Secretary of Treasury, you can be fired, right? But once you're the fourth person on the totem pole at the Treasury Department, you're a career employee and you're protected. There is an exempt category that's not law enforcement and it's not the military, because law enforcement and military also are exempted. What do you know what it is? Anybody? Robbie. It's White House staff. The porters, the butlers, the chefs, the cooks, the bakers, and the candlestick makers. So, I always thought that was such hogwash. Because I get it. The president doesn't want to have a useless person inside the White House in an environment where, you know, personalities matter and things like that. So you can fire. That's the only place where a federal employee, because that's what White House staff are, they're federal employees, is at will and basically can be dismissed without reason. Does that seem fair to you? No, it does not. But anyway, that's the thought I had. So anyway, I guess the president can get the right people in the White House to serve his every whim. But gosh forbid that the passport office takes 100 years to get anything done. Gosh forbid that we have competent people there that can be weeded through and fired as needed. Pete Buttigieg, Buttigieg is how he says you ought to pronounce his name. The Wunderking gay mayor of South Bend, Indiana. His husband's pretty funny. I got to tell you, I've been following him a little bit on social media. Anyway. Pete Buttigieg talks about democratic capitalism. This is a phrase, by the way, this is the buzz phrase of 2020. Democratic capitalism. Poppy Harlow on CNN is talking about how the democratic socialism trend is just taking off like wildfire, and asks if Buttigieg's democratic presidential hopefuls, his competition in the primary, if they vilified capitalism in a dangerous way.
The reason we're having this argument over socialism and capitalism is that capitalism has let a lot of people down. I guess what I'm out there to say is that it doesn't have to be so. I believe in democratic capitalism, but the democratic part is extremely important. I think during this Cold War, there was this assumption that capitalism and democracy were almost the same thing, that if you were for capitalism, you're also for democracy. Right now, we actually see democracy and capitalism coming into tension. Mm. It was very alarming to hear recently that one of the president's economic advisors said that between capitalism and democracy, he would choose capitalism. I would say the reverse ought to be true, that at the end of the day, we prioritize democracy. And, you know, having that framework of a rule of law, of fairness, is actually what it takes for markets to work.
Yeah, okay. I don't want to right now have all you start emailing me and tweeting at me and the friends of mine texting me that I don't know the difference between a representative democracy and a direct democracy. I do. For purposes of this argument, I'm just going to say one man, one vote. And when I say man, I mean man, woman, and trans, and whatever else. I just mean people. One human being, one vote. That's democracy. Capitalism is essentially how we is a free market, right? Is a type of economic freedom where we vote with our dollars. Dollars and votes are different things. Now, I understand, you know, with campaign finance and all that stuff that there's a blending. But I will give you a great example of countries that fail as nations that have democracy, but constantly flirt dangerously with economic socialism. And the country I can think of, I've been there a few times, beautiful country, sophisticated country, Argentina. Now, Argentina, if you go to the center of Buenos Aires, to the federal district, and you're in a neighborhood called Recoleta, speaking of Paris, you would think you're in Paris. There are apartments that are there that look like they were, you know, like Baron Haussmann type apartment blocks of just gorgeous turn-of-the-century fantasiacal buildings, gorgeous, gorgeous architecture. And you will find, I looked maybe 10, 15 years ago, I looked at such an apartment once with Sherry and flirted with the idea of having a Southern Hemisphere pied-à-terre. I'm using a lot of French on this program today. I hope you like it. I'm trying to keep up with Buttigieg, who spoke perfect French in expressing his condolences to the French people in the loss of Notre Dame. Anyway, so I thought about buying some apartment, and the apartment, which would have cost, I mean, this was a top floor penthouse apartment, gorgeous marble wood, everything, very ooh la la, was like 700 grand. Now, I know that's a lot of money, but listen to me, Paris, an equivalent apartment's 4 million, 3, 4 million. So then I kind of investigated, well, do they have loans? This, that. It is awful, right? The banking system, as you know, it collapses every 4 years. There's a run on a bank. We don't even, by the way, know what that is in America, right? Because we complain about our banking system sucking. And we complain about subprime mortgages and all this stuff. But here's the deal. There is a democracy where the people demand that wealth be raped every however many years. The socialists come to town and they demand, let's get the rich guy. Let's truss him up, pull him up, you know, tar and feather him, raid the bank, punish this and that. And what does it end up doing? The poverty there is unbelievable, even for a sophisticated country. And it's unbelievable because a stable banking system is foundational, right, to any kind of a market, right? And you can't have stable. Nobody wants to invest in a bank. What do you have to do to open a bank? Well, it's like a bank is a money store. So you've got to have a building and you've got to put a little vault in it and you've got to, you know, pull some people and some computers. But you also, to start a bank, you got to put some money in it, like cash, okay? Liquidity. Ever heard that word? So how do you get rich people to put money in a bank and start a bank when, 4 years ago, the government came by and stole it? This is Venezuela. Arguably a democracy, right? I mean, people get to vote, although that changed a little bit. But most socialist despots come in elected by the people. running, by the way, on campaigns not too dissimilar from what Bernie Sanders and some of his fellow Democrats are proposing. And they come in, and what do? Oh, yes, we're going to take these oil fields, these oil refineries, fields, you know, equipment, drills, pumps, whatever. We're going to take it. The government's going to take it. The government's going to operate it. Who else wants now? Do you want to go and invest in that country? If you're a corporation, do you want to improve the infrastructure that you have when you just saw them steal British Petroleum and Shell's refineries? No, no one. And so here's, if you could see me, I would show you I'm doing a big swooping motion with my arm. It's like a Boeing 737 MAX 8 airplane. I'm telling you, it'll go straight into the ground, fireball, and that right there is your economy. And who does it affect? Oh, sorry, the rich people that I tell you, they all left. They're in Switzerland living in a nice condo on Lake Lugano. But guess what? All you people, you dumb idiots that voted for Bernie, all you idiots that voted for Hugo Chavez, you're in the crapper. Because you got no mobility, you're stuck, you don't have another passport, you don't have the means to get out of the country, and you are, and we're back to my favorite word, you are F-U-C, fill in the rest of the blanks. Picture it's like Hangman. You want democracy? Go back to Ben Franklin. Democracy, yeah, do you remember this? Ben Franklin said democracy is three wolves and one sheep deciding what's for dinner. Deal with it. You want democracy, folks, and capitalism. Then you can vote with your dollars as well as in the ballot box. That, my friends, is true freedom. Sam Rzhovsky, back right after this.
I was listening the other day to a friend of mine. His name is Sam Rzhovsky. You'll find him very anything. He's very stylish. He's always wearing his suit. And if you want to hear someone's opinion that absolutely is correct, you listen to Sam. Anyone else is a waste of time.
Sam Rzhovsky, Sam Nation, here on the Sam Nation Radio Network. Yes, yes, yes. Bernie Sanders. I've been trashing him all show. So now I think we ought to hear from him. This clip here. This was on Monday. This is the Fox News town hall that everybody up in arms. Fox voters, by the viewers, excuse me, are turning off Fox News because they let Bernie into the building. You guys, it's capitalism. We're back to capitalism. They got a lot of viewers for it. Viewers equals money. Money is good. Fox News is in the business of making money. Where people on our side are dumb sometimes, too. Okay, here is Martha McCallum and Bernie Sanders talking about taxes, health care, and what's free and what's not.
It will drive up taxes to pay for health care. And not just the wealthy will pay for that. The middle class will also pay for it.
Very good.
So how do you justify it? And
all right, Martha, what are you not including in your discussion?
You tell me.
I will tell you. You're not going to pay any health insurance premiums.
You're going to pay one way or the other.
But look,
Martha. You're going to pay one way or the other.
Martha.
Whether it's in your income tax or your payroll tax, you're
going to
pay.
Look. Healthcare is not free. You never heard me suggest that we're going to magically...
You just said it was going to be free for everyone.
It's going to be free at the point of when you use it, okay?
Yes! I'm flying to Hawaii July 4th weekend. So I'm not telling you where I'm staying. But I'm flying to Hawaii July 4th weekend. And, yes, and I am flying on the airlines. I bought my tickets, 4 or 5 days ago? But when I show up at the airport, Robbie, I want you to know it's going to be free at the moment I get on the airplane because I looked it up. I'm flying on Hawaiian. And they serve Mai Tais in first class. I'm treating myself. I know I'm in it for the free Mai Tai. It's not a free Mai Tai. I paid a lot of money to get that Mai Tai. So I'm going to drink that Mai Tai. I'm going to enjoy it. But it's not free just because I'm not showing up at the airport and paying for my ticket right then and there. Doesn't mean that it didn't cost me anything. But that's, people have focused on that part of what he's saying. Now, here is the most important thing that we're all missing. He's saying, and he's being, God bless him, at least he's being transparent, but he's saying we're shifting the burden of administrating your health care from Kaiser, Blue Cross Blue Shield, private hospitals, to the government. It's still going to cost. It's not free, Martha. It's not free. It's just free at the time that you use it. Read in there little brackets that I'll put into you, because that is my job here on this program. The asterisk you read below to the footnotes on the page. We are going to tax you. We will take money from you and we will tax you. Bernie Sanders says, I'll tell you. You heard the first part. I'll tell you. You're not going to pay any health insurance premiums. Oh, good. Okay, so in order to like the Bernie program, I have to believe that the government is going to be more efficient and do a better job at taking the dollars that right now I'm spending and giving to in my case, I think Anthem Blue Cross. I think that's my health plan. Anyway, I give them to Blue Cross. I'm going to instead pay more money in taxes. And the government is going to do a better job at spitting out at the other end a product that I can get behind. I'm going to tell you what's going to happen. I think everybody here is expecting it's going to be like my trip to Hawaii. Everybody's expecting that they're going to pay bargain basement coach prices. And then Mai Tais are going to be raining down on everybody. Free Mai Tais. Oh, wait. No, there's going to be one guy up in first class. That's right. It's going to be Murjovsky, Mrs. Sam Nation, and my three Sam Nation juniors. And those guys, they're going to be paying like $1 million apiece so that all of you can have free Mai Tais in the back of the plane. Well, I got to tell you something. Those Mai Tais are going to suck. Those Mai Tais are not going to be good Mai Tais. Those Mai Tais might be called Mai Tais. They're not going to have a little umbrella on it. They're not going to have a slice of delicious fresh cut pineapple on the side. They're not going to have a good rum. They may not have any rum at all because rum's bad for you, right? Now we're all responsible for your damn healthcare. You're not getting any Mai Tais. Oh. No, follow me on this. This metaphor is absolutely 100% accurate. This is everybody, the image of what it's going to be is great. But please tell me, give me an example of something that the government does right. But please. Oh, yes, absolutely. I'm a member of Auto Club here in Southern California. I have been my entire life because my parents have put me on their plan. So my card actually says member for 38 years. I'm 38 years old. I think that's funny. But anyway. Oh, yeah. No, I would. Yes. When I am trying to register a car, I need something I can't do by mail. Oh, yes. I go to the Auto Club. Why? Oh, because the DMV sucks donkey. Who wants to? I mean, they're functionally doing the same thing. As a matter of fact, the Auto Club is paying for the pleasure of providing a service to its members. And its members are flocking to the Auto Club because they'd rather deal with a private administrator of a government function than the government itself. And here we are actually thinking about there are people that want to turn a private function over to the government. When there's a thriving organization right here in our own backyard of Southern Californians, and presumably Auto Club does this in other states. I think they do it in all but two or three states, where we are flocking to and paying money to be part of a club that takes government function away from the government. People, I mean, socialism works and has been, speaking of democracy, has been elected into force because people are dumb. Socialism is for dumb people who don't understand human nature and basic laws of economics. And that is all that can be said to Bernie and everybody that supports him. Sam Murjovsky, I'll be back right after this.
You're looking for a show that doesn't sugarcoat the truth. Sam Nation will accommodate you.
Oh, I got to tell you. So I go to, you know, I go to this dinner up in Santa Monica with my Czech industrialist friend. And we begin talking about 1%er problems, which is, you know, a fun pastime of mine from time to time. But I got to tell you, this guy gave me a run for my money. I have never had a conversation like this with anyone. Are you ready for this? This guy starts telling me about how he got a call from his groundskeeper at one of his castles. Yes, you heard me right. At one of his castles. And this castle has a Gothic tower that was, and this, by the way, not a chateau. I want to be clear about this. It's a castle. So this castle was fortified against invading forces. And there's a section of the castle that's medieval, and then there's a section of it that's Gothic. At any rate, it's not made out of straw. I'll just tell you that. It's made out of stone, and it's assembled all not with modern concrete, but still very thick walls designed to stave off invading armies. Well, apparently, some hobos, read homeless people, snuck into the grounds from the river up, kind of up the banks to the bottom of the castle, and carefully and methodically chiseled a hole that was huge. Well, he told me, they're telling me there's a hole in my tower. And I said, oh, well, I got to go see this. You know, I'm expecting a little, you know, 2 foot little opening that people were squeezing through. He goes, it was a 4 meter wide hole. It was a crater in the side of my tower. So I laughed about it. I said, well, what do you do now? Well, we got the bums out. But now I've got the government on my case about, you know, because it's a protected landmark. So the landmark people are now telling him how and exactly how they're supposed to fix the damn hole. And he goes, look, I just need to fix it. My tower's going to fall down. You know, I got to give the stones serve a structural purpose. And so we chuckled about that some more. And so he's still got the hole, and he's just fighting now with the government because they're telling him what kind of concrete to use. Did you know about this? You can't use modern concrete. Grout, right? In between the rocks. They used to make it using egg whites, something like that. So there's this debate right now in the preservationist community about how you have to actually use the same concrete. Here's an idea. You know, since this castle is located in an area where they had a few wars, including the 30 Years War. Little did we know that all the invading the Prussians or whoever were coming through, all they needed were 8 Czech bums, because they could have taken this castle with, that's all they needed. Well, you don't think that's funny? It's hilarious, right? This was a fortification built to stave off, armies that had, they didn't have machine guns, but they had, axes and picks and various things, and they didn't get through the walls there. But now, some bums come along. Maybe it's time to use real concrete. All right. That's it. Another show in the bag. Robbie tells me I have been on one today. So, sorry about that. Anyway, have a wonderful weekend. Have a wonderful Easter. God bless you all. And thank you for being part of the Sam Nation family.